Llewellyn's Pub is the place to be no matter what the occasion may be. Delicious, from-scratch food prepared daily, great drink specials, including game-time specials, and an amazing atmosphere. What more could you want? How about brunch? Llewellyn's, Soulard, Webster, Wildwood, and St. Charles all offer brunch every weekend from 9:30 to 2. Save yourself the hassle and hop on Llewellyn's trolley to the game from Soulard. And stay tuned to learn how you can win a chance to throw out the first pitch at a Cardinal game later this year. Llewellyn's Pub, Celtic for good times.
Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now, back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on CBS Sports, 105.7 HD2 FM, 920 AM, and InsideSTL.com.
After on CBS Sports, 105.7 HD2 FM, 920 AM, and InsideSTL.com, live. The Gateway Buick GMC Studios today on the road on Washington Avenue for the Cinco de Mayo festivities. We are at Blondie's right across from Rosalita's, home of the Cinco de Mayo festivities all day long. A beautiful Thursday for your Cinco de Mayo festivities. Cardinals and Phillies, Blues and Stars this evening. What else could you ask for on a Thursday in May? In St. Louis.
Nothing. Yep. Nothing out. A little warmer weather, maybe. But it's supposed to get in the mid-60s, I think. So we'll be all right.
The Cat, if you are not going to be able to go to Busch Stadium or to the Scott Trade Center tonight, a perfect spot to watch the game, the Post Sports Bar and Grill.
Great place to go. Even if you are going to the game, you go to the Post Sports Bar and Grill after it. No better place to watch Blues hockey if you can't get to the game. They got great specials for Blues games, including great pricing on 22-ounce domestic drafts, free Blue Note shots when Alexander Steen scores a goal. Same goes for the Cardinals. If you can't get to a Cardinal game, get to the Post Sports Bar and Grill. They've got great ticket giveaways for Cardinals games on Tuesday and Friday, and free Redbird shots when Randall Grichuk hits a homer. You can't get to the game, you get yourself to the Post Sports Bar and Grill, and stay posted, my friend.
There it is, the Grichuk. Post Sports Bar and Grill.
Grichuk cut his hair, I see. Is there a reason behind that?
I didn't ask him, Doug.
Trying to change up his luck a little bit?
Yeah, guys do that.
Yeah, it's worth a shot.
I did like last night's game because you see Adams, as you said, having a good homestand, getting together. Wong, who's been scuffling, gets on base. It was a bizarre lineup yesterday, as Mike said. Mike Matheny said with the day game tomorrow and a long stretch of games, he wanted to get creative to try to get a lot of right-handed bats in the lineup. So he had Molina at first. Carpenter got a rare day off, though he did pinch hit later.
I could be wrong, but I think they've had a different lineup every game this season. I'm not sure they've used the same one twice.
He changes a lot. Mike Matheny was asked about that, and he said it's not – desirable. He wishes he had the kind of lineup where you just plug the same guys in, but he said they built this team to have options in case someone gets hurt, and you know, got to get guys at bats, you got to give guys a rest, so it's a juggling act at times.
I think it helps to play everybody. I don't think it does any good to just have somebody rot on the bench, and then when you need him, he hadn't played in a week and a half. La Russa used to do that, used to frustrate us with some of the lineups that he put out there, but over the long haul, I think it's a really good thing to play everybody.
Got to keep bats alive, Doug.
It's not like they've got, in the early 2000s, they had some teams that had three or four superstars out there. They weren't coming out. They don't really have that now. So it makes some sense to shuffle the deck almost on a nightly basis.
Fryer was behind the plate. Tejada was at third base to start the game.
Yeah.
Different lineup. But they do have the pieces that you can throw out a lot of different lineups.
Diaz got moved up.
And Mike said the reason for Aledmys Diaz in the leadoff spot, he wanted to give Carpenter a day, and someone had to hit someone had to hit leadoff. And Mike likes him in the eighth because, as he put it, Diaz has a comfort zone there, so they don't want to mess with that. But he is really good. Two strikes, I think he was hitting 364, puts a lot of balls in play. Doesn't strike. Strike out a lot.
This guy is as hot as he's been. Yeah, I'd get him as many at bats as you can get him. But then, of course, as soon as he moves him out of the eighth spot, he kind of cools down a little bit. But you got to figure he wasn't going to hit 450. And I know that by being a keen observer of the game.
Well, he got a hit last night. You can't go 3 for 4 all season, Doug.
No, and you know that by being a keen observer of the game.
That would be a record-setting pace, I think. That would, if you're 3 for 4, that means you're hitting over 250.
What's the record for highest average in a major league season?
Rogers Hornsby?
426 Hornsby? I think that's the record in the, like, in since the 20th century anyway.
You look at some of the Hall of Famers from the early days, back even before Doug, and a lot of them had career averages, the best. I'm talking about Hall of 360, 370. We don't even see that in the season
Cobb,
anymore.
367
right?
is the highest.
Yeah.
I don't know what that was about. I'm sure they faced pitching that was throwing the ball about 75 miles an hour.
And the same, they didn't have specialists at the end of games, and it was the same guys starting twice in a four-game series.
And they had lousy gloves. And the gloves take away a lot of hits.
How about that whole deal with the gloves? Are we going to bring that back?
Well, I don't think you need to bring it back. They're wearing gloves. Used to be the outfielders would just get rid of their gloves, throw them on the field between innings, not even take them with them on the dugout.
Craig.
I think that's what it was mostly, is the pitching was totally different. Different
sport.
Fields probably weren't manicured. I'm sure they weren't manicured like they are today. A lot of bad hop hits and fielders using much smaller gloves.
But the ball was deader. When Babe Ruth hit his 60, that was more than some teams hit.
Yeah.
Ball didn't travel like it does today.
Speaking of Ty Cobb, I read a thing that a writer did on him a month or so ago that says his reputation is largely inaccurate, that the reputation of him just being the world's worst person and going into stands and fighting people, most of it is inaccurate, that it got started by a hack writer who tried to do his autobiography in like 1960 and just kind of made some stuff up. And the rest of the world has just gone with it ever since. And this writer has done a lot of research, and they found that he wasn't the racist he was claimed to be, that his grandfather was an abolitionist, and his father did a lot to go against the Jim Crow laws. And, in fact, Ty Cobb went to a lot of Negro League games, threw the ball out to the first pitch out, sat in the dugout with a lot of guys, argued for their inclusion in the game. And he wasn't as mean spirit as some people say he was.
What
supposedly
about that
this
movie?
Guy.
I thought if you saw it in the movie.
It's another case of the whole world just going along with the myth that was made up of a guy who was the first real superstar in American sports. It made good copy. It made stunning copy that this guy that was the greatest player turned out to be a jerk. In fact, much of that was exaggerated. I don't think anybody said he was the nicest guy in the world, but that he certainly played hard. But like the story about him going into the stands and beating up a handicapped man, apparently the guy had been yelling at him for weeks and weeks, and he went up in the stands to tell him to shut up, and the guy took a swing at him, and he wasn't handicapped. He's like missing a finger or two. And everything about him has just been exaggerated to the point where now when you think Ty Cobb, you think, what a miserable person, and it's not really fair.
Well, that whole movie talked about him after his playing career, how he was miserable. And while he played, he enjoyed. I've read this several places. Putting the spikes high and trying to hurt other players.
Yeah, I mean that's maybe he did that once or twice. A lot of players have been involved in incidents where they collided with somebody. I went to YouTube and saw him on To Tell the Truth, where they brought him out and people asked questions to try to figure out what he did. This was in the early '60s. This was perhaps the greatest player of all time. Nobody knew who he was. None of the people guessed it.
His numbers were insane.
Yeah. Well, no.
Derek Gould's going to be here live and in person at 8:15. Scott Stevens with us on our Bud Light Stanley Cup coverage. That's coming your way at 9 o'clock. Send your emails in the morning after at InsideSTL.com. It's a $20 gift certificate to Bertarelli Cutlery, $20 gift certificate to Bertarelli Cutlery the morning after at InsideSTL.com. Mascot Agency, so we use to rebuild InsideSTL.com, 314-650-9083, 314-650-9083, mascotagency.com. Like them on Facebook. Follow them on Twitter at BeatMascot. They do web design, logo design, marketing and advertising, social media, search engine optimization, and internet marketing, packaging design, print and collateral materials. It's creative that works as hard as you do. It's creative with character. It's Mascot. Mascot Agency, 314-650-9083. 314-650-9083. Meet Mascot on Twitter. So Doug's a Ty Cobb truther. Who knew? That's from Brother Aber. What's a Ty Cobb truther?
Just trying to get to the truth of who the guy was, I guess. It's a really compelling article that has come out with a guy trying to set the record straight.
Where was it posted?
I forget the exact publication.
Because I would like to read that.
Is it on the fan page?
I'll send it to you when I find it. If you Google Ty Cobb, the truth, it comes up.
I just did.
That
guy
makes a pretty compelling case.
I Googled Ty Cobb, and the first thing I saw is Doug is a liar.
Dude. All right. I have no reason to make it up.
I know. I was kidding. It was just a joke. Right. I would like to read that. If you do find it, pass it along.
All right.
It is old-time players, the sport, fascinating to me. Fascinating to me that you could be the biggest star in the sport of baseball where there are billions of dollars on the line today, and you had to work in a...
Now, a guy's entire reputation rested on what a sports writer thought of him and what they wrote. I mean, they didn't go on TV, and you couldn't see for yourself how he really talked and what he was really saying and what his disposition was like. It was all reliant on what a sports writer wrote. And if the sports writer didn't like him, you were in real trouble. And apparently that happened to him.
But back in the day, there wasn't just one like beat reporter, like the Cardinals have one beat reporter, maybe the columnist from the Post-Dispatch. Back then,
they had a couple.
They had a few scribes. So you would think that an accurate depiction would be available somewhere.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they didn't. They certainly looked the other way at a lot of things too, because they were more a part of the team than they were part of the newspaper, I believe.
Rights holders.
Yeah, they had the rights holderitis in a big way. I mean, nobody ever wrote much of anything about Babe Ruth and all the stuff that he did off the field until much later, when he was playing. They didn't write that. I mean, they were all into building up this American hero.
Plus, he was nice to them. That's another thing too. If that's your main source for your team information, and the guy's nice to you, you don't want to tear him down.
And apparently Ty Cobb was not mean to them either. They have pictures of him writing long notes back to kids who called and asked for his autograph and everything. It's really sad if this is truth and this is the reality. It's really sad that a guy who was that good had his legacy and his reputation just ruined by a writer, a sports writer.
You think that happened to Tino Martinez during his time in St. Louis, one sports writer?
No.
Made it seem like it didn't go well?
No. I think guys like Tino Martinez, they love him in New York. You know, there's a lot of sides to a guy. A guy hangs around that long. He might say one thing to somebody that they don't like over the course of a 15- or 16-year career. That's okay. That's hard not to.
Hey, look, it's
especially
crazy
with the demands that they face now. Oh, hello, Gouldy.
Derek Gould joining us live here as we are broadcasting on Washington Avenue. It's the Rosalita's Cinco de Mayo festivities all day long here on Washington Avenue. And we welcome you to come on by before and after the Cardinals game and before the Blues and the Stars. Come on by Washington Avenue. Rosalita's Cinco de Mayo festivities going on all day long. All day into the night. Live mariachi band, mechanical bowl, entertainment, food, drinks, family fun. Face and body painters. It's at Rosalita's.com, 1235 Washington Avenue. Rosalita's is the spot to be for Cinco de Mayo. A beautiful, absolutely perfect day. Doug, it's cloudless is what I would describe it as.
Mm-hmm. But I still see people with winter coats on outside.
Yeah, I think it will be warm as the day progresses. Derek Gould sitting down with us here, co-host of the Writer's Block and, of course, Cardinal beat reporter, Post-Dispatch. Scott Stevens will be with us as we get back into Blues discussion. Now, you covered the Blues for how many years for the Post-Dispatch?
3 years.
3 years. 2000 through 2002?
2001 through 2004 until the strike.
All right.
Or until the lockout. Sorry, the lockout.
So you covered the end of the Quenneville era.
I did. I covered the last day of the Quenneville era. We talked a little bit. We had Larry Plow on the Writer's Block yesterday and talked a little bit about that. That's one of the more memorable days of my in my career that I can remember. I mean, this is the day they fired.
What do you have to say about that?
Larry? Yeah, you know, we talked just about how they parted on good terms. We didn't rehash the whole thing. That day, Larry told me just how much, I guess, turmoil he was in doing it. The timeline of it is part of the story because, like, the Blues had struggled. They were drifting. And then they go into Calgary and they win. And you remember they had the hard hat award that the players used to give?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they called a lot of folks in to the dressing room that night after beating Calgary in Calgary with this really important win. And the players presented Quenneville with the Hard Hat Award. And it was one of the few times, you know, a lot of times they do that, yeah. And I'd ask about it and I'd find out. But it wasn't, like, always newsworthy. It was obvious, or it just was a token. This was a case where they invited a lot of people in to see this because it was the team saying, this is our coach. This is the guy we want. And so they win in Calgary. They give him the Hard Hat Award. And I hope I'm remembering all this right. And then they go off to the All-Star break. And after the All-Star game, which was there in Minnesota, one of the more fascinating All-Star games, because it wasn't a high-scoring affair, there was checking, there was a left-wing lock. It was a mess of an All-Star game. They go to Ottawa and just get blitzed. The Blues do. And it was like, all right, well, if he made it past the All-Star break, aren't they just going to stick with him, especially with that win? And that's something that Larry talked about, was that maybe when they were flagging just a little bit earlier, you know, he was going to make the move. Then they went in Calgary, and you can't do it after the team does that. And then they have the same problems coming out of the break that they had immediately before the Calgary win. Something had to be done, and Larry went on this long walk and came to this really just, he knew that the coach was not at fault, but or entirely at fault, but the coach, the move had to be made. And it was fascinating. That day, Quenneville had his mid-season interviews with individual players that morning. And so, like, and that was one of the reasons why, just like on a personal note, we saw this happen. I'm like, well, they're not going to. I mean, he's just met with Osgood. I just talked with Chris Osgood. He just talked with, you know, Doug Wade. They're not going to fire him after having him go through all these interviews. Today is the day I can go see Miracle. I'm going to go see Miracle. So I went to go see Miracle, and my phone blows up about two-thirds of the way into Miracle.
You're supposed to silence your cell phones, Derek.
I do silence the cell phone, you know, and all that.
Oh, yeah.
So.
It was 2004. Think about it. Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it was a fascinating kind of day, especially as you could see that the moment to fire Quenneville had passed. So how were they going to do it? And this is how they ended up doing it.
I felt like in the moment, you know, that's the only fair way to really judge something, because anybody can look back at what happened and then go, well, we should have done this. You know, that's. But in the moment, I thought it was he was paying the price in part in 2004, Derek, for them losing a 3-1 series lead in 2003 against Vancouver.
Best team, yeah. We asked about that. So we did talk about that. I asked him because I thought the teams that faced the Avalanche. So I was in Denver.
Right,
covering the Nuggets, but because the Nuggets weren't as, weren't as popular, I was covering the Avalanche playoff run that year in 2001 with Ray Bourque and all that stuff, and they beat the Blues, and that was an impressive Blues team.
Yeah,
well, it was a better Avalanche team. I mean, that Avalanche team was. Now you look at that Avalanche team, and my gosh, it's like a cluster of stars.
Absolutely,
it's amazing to think that a roster had that many good players on it. But
God, yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
I don't know what was better, the 2001 Avalanche, the 2002 Red Wings. It's like the Hall of Fame.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you look back at those names, going, "Oh my gosh, yeah. Alex Tanguay, Peter Forsberg, you know, Blake Bork, Sakic, Waugh." I mean, you know, Adam Foote. I mean, it's just, oh my gosh, every line out there. And then, so I covered that team, and then in 03, I thought that was a very impressive Blues team, and we can probably debate whether it was or not, but I thought Chris Osgood was the best goaltender at that time. He was having the best run of any goaltender during the time I covered, and he was playing well enough to get the team deep into the playoffs. And we asked Larry Plough about, like, what was holding them back during his 13 years as general manager. And he said they never had the goaltender. Mm. They never had the one goaltender at some point in time in a series where they go, yep, that guy stole the game for us. And he said you need one every seven-game series.
Turek had a great series against the Stars in 2001. But then he imploded against the Avalanche, a great team, in 2001 in the Western Conference Finals. And I guess there's, in some capacity at this point, a tinge of irony in that the Blues have been on this quest to find a goalie going back to God. I mean, the 90s, going out and getting Fuhrer, if you want to go back that far. Mm-hmm. Of course, Curtis Joseph earlier on in the decade. And it's a guy who was a backup, and they weren't sold on, who, at least so far, has been the one to perform perhaps the best of any goaltender the Blues have had in the playoffs.
What is it about Freddie Brathwaite you weren't impressed with?
Okay, I'll
Tom Barrasso. Tom Barrasso.
I take it back.
Reinhardt. He's been unbelievable. I mean, they wouldn't be where they are without Elliott. That goes for when Allen got hurt. That goes for what they're doing in the postseason. And you could say, well, you know, they didn't know what they had. But as you recall, when we talked to the national pundits before the playoffs started, almost all of them had questions about whether or not Elliott could do it in the playoffs. He's answered them to this point.
If Allen hadn't gotten hurt in the regular season, he might have been the playoff goalie. I'm not sure they've settled on it until Allen got hurt and Elliott got hot right at the end.
He played his best right after that and went crazy.
Yeah.
Good for him. You know?
Yeah, it's about time he got the shot.
Every team kind of needs something like that. Every team needs somebody to kind of rise up and steal the opportunity, you know, make the most of an opportunity.
They need an Aledmys Diaz. So, transition there to baseball. See what I did there? Did you get a lot of work done last night? You had, like, what, 15 interviews after the game?
It was amazing.
You had to sit through all that last night?
It was a fountain. Like somebody turned on the fire hose of quotes and insight, and I didn't know how to, you know, I couldn't take it.
I felt bad for it. I got out of there. I was like, this is too much for me.
Yeah. Why did everybody bolt like the wind?
I don't know.
It was a late night. That's just what they do?
A day game, maybe.
That's what they do.
Some guys but maybe day game.
No, they just do that. They're allowed to do that. It's permissive in the culture that has been created.
In Major League Baseball or specific to the Cardinals?
With the Cardinals.
Wow. How about that?
Well, there were a couple guys I was hoping to catch up with that I didn't get a chance to.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I would have liked to talk to a few guys, too. I would have liked to have had a brief moment with Holiday. I would have really liked to talk to Leak so that I didn't have to guess as to what was going wrong with him. But, I mean, I made an educated guess. I'm pretty sure I know.
Leak wasn't around?
No.
Usually
isn't always the starter around?
Yeah.
Has this been going on for a while?
What do you mean? I don't remember the starting pitcher unless there's been rare occasions that the starting pitcher was not available. A few times there's been.
Shot at Brett Tomko.
I wasn't around back then. But there, you know, in the last decade plus, there's been very few times when the starting pitcher. I mean, I probably can count on one hand.
Wow.
When the starting pitcher hasn't been available.
They just get in the showered and get out of there before the doors open, or mm-hmm. they take a back way to get out so that you never see them?
All of that.
Huh.
Well, Holiday was a delight. I talked to him on the...
Have access to him on the field. Last I checked, I don't.
Well, I'll talk to
him. Got to run out there today to see what happens.
Let's see what happens. I've had moments.
I've had a lot of great moments.
I've had moments where I've thought about doing that. Well, one time when the music was blaring, I recently was telling Tony Clark, the union chief, this thing about how, you know, in the clubhouse sometimes the music is blaring and sometimes it's vulgar. Mm-hmm. And we went through a stretch. You know this cat. We went through a stretch where it was purposefully loud. And maybe
was that Tomko again?
And
Wells was not a
I brought it up, and I went to union rep. This was several years ago. I went to the union rep and explained the situation. I went to the guy who ran the music, so to speak, and explained the situation. And I said, you have to understand how this is coming across. Whether you guys mean to or not, it seems like you're doing it on purpose. If you mean to do it on purpose, then I tip my cap to you. Grow up. If you don't mean to do it on purpose, then understand people think you are doing it on purpose. And this is ruining audio. This is going live out to fans at some point in time. If this is what you want to present to the public, then that's what it is, because this is what we're left with doing.
See,
and I said the alternative is I can go over and turn it off, because I thought that that would be the nuclear option.
Woo.
Is that if I walked over and pressed, and then we'd see what happened. And that was the final step.
I don't think that would have played well.
No, I don't think it would have either.
I'm a newbie
at this. What would have been the reaction?
Oh, people would have been. See, my thing is, if you pull a guy aside.
I mean, I'm respectful of their space. I am.
And
it
is
their workplace.
It's theirs.
It is. And so I didn't want to go to the nuclear option. But that's what they were left with.
It's been my experience. When I pull aside a guy and I go, hey, look,
mm-hmm.
the reason why I asked if you could turn, because I've asked if someone could turn it down.
Yeah.
Because you have a close-up of you and a mic in your face. And what you're hearing in the background, and at Fox, we have a policy, you don't play it if there's curse words,
right.
Even in the background, someone get in trouble for that. So a lot of times we won't run it. But even if it's you know, something that doesn't cross the line.
Right.
Maybe that's not the image you want to portray. Because
that's the please conversation I've had seven times.
Please understand it's your face up there, and you're talking, and this is going, and that's why I bring it up. And usually, if you explain it that way, I think that sometimes players feel, and I understand it. There's a lot of us in the clubhouse. I know you're busy working. I'm busy. Sometimes there's guys just seemingly there.
Yeah, that's wrong.
And
just loitering, yeah.
And the players, I think, look at it as, you know, we're encroaching on their space. They understand you have a job to do. I have a job to do. But if you explain it to them that way, here's why I have a problem with the music that loud, then usually they understand, and for at least a short time,
yeah,
someone fixes that.
But we have to explain it over and over and over. How many times have you had to explain that?
A couple of times.
Plus times.
Who controls the music?
I don't know now.
One player who's being
angry? Generally speaking,
I mean, nationally, Barry Manilow. But I don't know in the, right? I mean,
that's a pretty good line.
He is music.
That's pretty funny.
And he writes the songs.
I think he writes the songs, not controls the music. Yeah.
Derek Gould sitting down with us. We are on Washington Avenue. It is Cinco de Mayo. Beautiful day. Come on down. Pre- and post-game Cardinals-Phillies. Pre-game for the Blues and Stars. Perfect day in downtown St. Louis for your festivities. Rosalita's Tex-Mex right on Washington Avenue. Tim McKernan, Jimmy the Cat Hayes, Douglas Elvin Vaughn with you. Derek Gould sitting in here. He'll be covering the Cardinals and the Phillies coming up 12:45 start. Then the Pirates come to town. They're getting shipped around by the Chicago Cubs, just like everybody else. The Cubs at 12:06. I want to ask you about that. But first, let me tell the listeners about daily fantasy sports, and in particular DraftKings. You can experience the thrill of one-week fantasy golf every week at DraftKings.com. Amazing prizes are up for grabs each time you play. And playing is easy. Just pick six golfers before a tournament tees off. Stay under the salary cap and rack up points based on how your players perform. Outscore the competition and win. Whether you're a total golf enthusiast or you just love the thrill of fantasy sports, DraftKings brings the excitement of the game to a whole new level. With every monster drive and made putt bringing you closer to payday, choose from all kinds of sports to showcase your winning skills, baseball, soccer, even MMA. Millions of sports fans just like you have discovered the magic of DraftKings. Now it's your turn. Use promo code 920, that's 920, at DraftKings.com and play for free with your first deposit in a fantasy golf contest with $400,000 in prizes. Top prize is $100,000, so you can seriously cash in. That's code 920 to play for free and a shot at the $100,000 top prize only at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. Just in general, my feel on the 2016 Cardinals is they are an average to perhaps above average team, but even if they are a good team that has yet to come into its own, and I suppose you could say that's possible because most of the pitchers have not performed to what I think we would have thought they would be doing so far, the Cubs may be in a different stratosphere. What's your analysis 26 games in?
The Cubs are playing a lot like the 2015 Cardinals with the benefit of power, and that's how it strikes me. I think the Cubs, when you watch them, they do a lot of things as far as playing the game sound and not permitting their opponents really any breathing space. They don't make many mistakes. They don't make mistakes pitching. They don't give up extra bases. They are ready and willing and able to take advantage of other teams' mistakes, and they hit for power. I think they're a lot like the 2015 Cardinals in that regard. In fact, I thought they out-cardinaled the Cardinals in this series, that the two teams had at Busch, where you look at what won those games, and it was catches by Jason Hayden.
Yeah.
It was a quality start by John Lackey. It was like looking into the past and realizing, all right, that's the Cubs of this year. Plus they've added a Rizzo, who is a genuine MVP candidate, Bryant, who probably will win an MVP in his career, and you know, other elements of that lineup that can strike fear into an opposing team.
Fowler's gone crazy in the early
games. Fowler has gone crazy.
That's one that you look at. If you look at the Cubs' numbers right now, you go, that's probably going to regress. The weird thing is they're 20-6.
Rizzo's going to get better.
They're going to get – there are a number of guys who are actually underperforming offensively.
Yeah.
But I don't know if – you know, Doug brought up the 1986 Mets. I don't know what your memory is of 86 Mets. Of course, they won the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
But they won the National League East. You weren't even paying attention to the standings. And the Cardinals weren't, like, I don't think they were horrible, but
no,
the Mets were just so good.
June.
There was no wild card, of course, so it was just over. You weren't even really monitoring it. And I wonder if the Cubs, even if the Cardinals are an 80-ish win team, will run away with this thing. And
I'm not sure 80 gets you into the... Yeah, I mean,
well, I'm not saying they will get into the playoffs.
Yeah, 80 would be a runaway for the Cubs, unless the Pirates are somewhere in the low 90s. I mean, the Cubs and the Nationals, because of the division they're in and because of how good they are, and the Cubs, because of how good they are, both have the chance to win 100 games because the National League has this wide disparity of teams.
Yeah, boy, does it ever. And that was interesting because we saw that, all of us, I think, talked about that going into the season.
Yeah.
That that's how it would be. In a tinge of irony, the team the Cardinals are playing today was, I thought anyway, was going to be one of the have-not-ish
teams.
They still might be, but they're 15 and 11 now?
Yeah. Yeah, but that this is why I think this series against the Phillies is so fascinating, far more to me fascinating than the National Series, is because here's a team in the Phillies that the Cardinals are better than, are supposed to be better than, should be better than, by any measure should be better than. But the Phillies are playing really well, and they're pitching really well. So how do the Cardinals, who aren't playing well but should be better than this team, beat this team? And you saw yesterday, it was find a crack, get lucky,
right,
blow, you know, pull away in the ninth inning, get a walk, and we'll see what it looks like today. You know, and then the other day, Aaron Nola, I'm going to say it, I got ripped for saying it. Aaron Nola was just good. He was a really good pitcher. Yeah. And you're going to run into guys who have either the game of their life or have a lot of talent and can just out-pitch you. And you're going to lose games like that over 162. Aaron Nola was like, he wasn't Kluber-esque. You guys remember a few years ago where Kluber just was dominant.
Yeah. There was nothing.
And Nola wasn't Kluber-esque, but he's in that 10 people spectrum of pitchers who have just gone and said, you know what, Cardinals, you got nothing on me tonight.
See, with the Cardinals, are they a 500 team? Are they low blow? Are they a little better? To me, and we've talked about this, I just figured they were going to be like last year where the starting pitching was going to be good. Bullpen is better than it was last year.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to go the season scoring six runs a game based on the fact that some of the guys that are red hot, I don't know if they can maintain it. But Wainwright's got to be closer to Adam Wainwright, and Leak has to get it going. I know traditionally he's been a slow starter. But that starting, but this starting rotation has to be close to what it was last year, in my opinion, for the Cardinals to be what I think they can be anyway, which is a good solid team that could give the Cubs a run.
Yeah, I think that the Cubs have a team that can sprint to a big lead, and the Cardinals have a team that is more likely to win a marathon. I mean, just the way this roster is built, where it's built for depth. Pyrotechnics. It's built for starting pitching and to have reliable starting pitching in August, not to go into the season with a young guy who's going to get battered around. I mean, I think, you know, if there's a gap to be closed with the Pirates, it's going to be because the Pirates don't have the pitching depth or the they don't get the starting consistency come June, July, August that is needed to maintain the rate of play that they have. Same thing with the Cubs. The Cubs, all of a sudden, you know, I mean, Arrieta's really good, but just say he's going to be good for the rest of the season. But, you know, Lester, Lackey, Hamill, some of these guys, right now, they're pitching really well.
Yeah.
They have a downturn of 6-7 starts in a row, which they're entirely likely to have as those innings start to mount. You think that that's going to be the trough that they go into, whereas the Cardinals, with their starting pitching, have, A, had that trough now, and weren't expected to.
Top three teams in the National League?
The Cubs, Nats, and Mets.
Yeah, all right. That's where I would be, too.
Yeah.
And do you guys agree with that?
Mostly pitching.
Yeah. Probably in that order, actually. Mm-hmm.
But interestingly enough,
I think the Nats are really good.
Spring training-wise, and they're just getting overshadowed because it's the Cubs. If this were another team doing it, it wouldn't get as much attention, but it still would get a lot of attention. It's a 20-6 record. You can't ignore that. But as far as the Cubs and Cardinals, at least I remember this discussion amongst everybody. It's not amongst just us. The thought process was the Cardinals starting pitching is better than the Cubs starting pitching. It could, of course, play out that way because you don't expect Jason Hamill to continue to do what he is currently.
I think the innings will catch up with him most of all, but Hendricks and all these other guys too.
But Leak, you go, wow, this is odd. The cat you made reference to him being a slow starter. Wainwright, you could go, this just might be kind of the way it's going to go for where he is in his career and the innings he's put on the arm.
Except he didn't throw a lot last year.
Yeah, I think it's the opposite.
That he didn't throw a lot last year?
I think this all stems from he didn't. I don't think he's ever had an arm this strong. Because, like, you watch him throw, and, Kat, you've seen him as much as I have. I don't try to get through. We all saw it on October as he just wasn't right.
Right.
And you watch him throw now, and it's like, oh, my gosh, he looks physically right. And he just hasn't. His body's off.
He said the hard part is he's never felt this healthy.
Yeah.
and hasn't had the success.
He's frustrated
to go
by
with
it. Yeah, he goes, people are calling me old, and I feel like I'm 6 years younger.
What do you do though if you've got Wainwright and Leak, $180 million tied up between the two or six right now?
Well,
I know it's too early now, but
and to be honest,
I have an answer for you. How long is the season? Right. That's how long you go with them. Their ability to pitch is essential to your intention to contend. You have built this roster around those two guys, not specifically, but they're part of a nucleus, right? Can we all agree that they're part of the nucleus that has to perform in the same way that Carpenter or Holiday and Molina? If this team is going to do anything, it's got to emanate from those guys. So
if one of those guys, if Holiday hits 150, you don't go with him forever.
You don't?
I don't think you do. No. At some point, you got to start putting the best players out there.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but at some point, you need your best players to be your best players, or you're just not that team.
And what if that never happens?
Then you're not that team. Then you're not the team you imagined, and there are repercussions after the year.
Do you with Wainwright, because you can't really find something tangible. As he points out, everyone has a theory as to what's going on with his mechanics. I will say this: he hits that three-run bomb, and then he pitched, in my opinion, his best right after that. Like everything, and he said he noticed that too. It was pointed out to him by one of the relievers that his best stuff followed that home run.
Huh.
So and he said, I don't know if it was the blood was flowing or whatever, but he was better anyways. You know, as you've seen, a little bit more life on the fastball.
Better curveball than we'd ever
better
seen.
Better curveball, except it's still not consistent enough where it doesn't get crushed here and there, but more consistent than it's been earlier in the season. I'm hoping at some point he can be close to what we've seen from him in the past. And it looks like he hates the word incremental improvements, you know, but that's what he's done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it looks like a guy in spring training, to be honest. I mean, he looks like a guy who just made his final start of spring training.
Which is bizarre, but
it's odd. Yeah. But it's a whole lot of his game is so much muscle memory and knowledge of his mechanics and ability to repeat each, like, four checkpoints, like, every time. These are the 4 points he gets to. However he gets to them, he gets to these four places every time, and the pitch comes the same way. And he just hasn't been able to do that. You know, a couple starts, like he said, he had 12 different voices in his ear. He took 7 different caddies out to the mound and was trying to remember all of his mechanics. And by the time it came time to throw a pitch, was not thinking about actually delivering the pitch. Had no, he used the word conviction, that he lacked conviction in the pitch because his head was so clouded with all these thoughts about where his mechanics weren't. Now he's regained trust in the mechanics. He feels like they've made a fix that is necessary. He can go out there and throw with conviction. He doesn't yet have the sharpness of the curveball, but we saw elements of the benefit of a good curveball this last. I mean, when he elevated the fastball, he struck out a guy. I wish I could remember who, but he elevated a 91-mile-an-hour fastball, got the guy to strike out underneath it. And the other time, he elevated a 91-mile-an-hour fastball and got a swing and miss. When he's able to do that, that means that the hitters are respecting his curveball because they're coming out of the same spot, they're coming out at the same eye level, and those guys are expecting that ball to plunge right into their swing, and he dusts them with the elevated fastball. So those are good signs, and I thought the Arizona game was a really important stride for him because his stuff was good, he just wasn't as efficient as necessary. And now you saw elements of, I think that's what you're kind of talking about, is after the home run, more efficiency, and does that carry into his next start so that it's a 7-inning start, you know, and not these shorter starts.
What do you think they are offensively? Because I'm not buying that they're 6 runs a game, per se, I do think Peralta will help if he can be anything close at shortstop and they can move guys around. What do you think they are? Are they a team that even if they get the starting pitching, it will be a bit of a slog, or do you think they're better than that?
I think they're a better offensive team. I think they should be, and the expectations should be, and so far they've shown that they're a better offensive team than last year's team. They have more power, and it looks like some of that can sustain. I think Aledmys Diaz has been a revelation offensively for them.
And you buy in that that's not Hazel Baker-esque. And by that, I mean it's got staying power.
I mean, since the first day we saw Diaz, and I talked, and even before they signed him and I talked to scouts, what folks said about him is he will hit. He has bat speed. He has life. He will be able to hit, and he'll hit a fastball. And, I heard it a lot. If he can hit a fastball, he'll likely adjust and do well enough against the other pitches that he'll hit. The question is, what position? Allow me to tease this a little bit. I'm going to take a deeper look into the scouting of him and exactly how the Cardinals settled on this being the guy felt that this was the right guy for Sunday's paper. So I'm still kind of in the process of doing the reporting and everything and trying to put it all together. But I also know some of the story, having talked to the scouts and Mosellock and agents and stuff as this was going on, and as it appeared like, at the time there were many Cuban players available. There are many now, but there were a group that were all kind of the Dodgers signed one at the same time as the Cardinals did, and actually he was suspended yesterday for not living up to his contract. The Dodgers made that move. So there were available one, but was this guy is going to hit? Mm-hmm. And it's just a question of where does he play? Is his glove good enough? Could he be a utility guy? But he's going to hit for you. And, I mean, I don't think we've seen any. I mean, look at what he did yesterday in the leadoff spot. I've been really impressed with what he's done in the eighth spot because he looks willing to take a walk. I don't walk all that often, but each of his walks has been pretty key. When you think about it, he took the walk that set up Wainwright's triple, right?
Yep.
I mean, how many rookies do you know who go up there and go, look, this guy's not giving me anything to hit. This is the game on the line, and they don't. We know veterans who would swing outside the zone. We know third-year players who would swing outside the zone trying to force that moment and might go 4-3. I mean, that was like a 4-3 waiting to happen, and Diaz was calm enough, trusted enough in whatever, and said, you know what, put me on, and maybe, just maybe, Wainwright will put the ball in play.
Derek Gould is sitting down with us here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. We're broadcasting live from Washington Avenue. The Cinco de Mayo Street Festival is going on all day into the night. Live mariachi band, mechanical bull, entertainment, food, drinks, family fun, face and body painters, rosalitas.com, 1235 Washington Avenue. Scott Stevens will be with us for our Bud Light presentation of Stanley Cup playoff coverage here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. That's coming your way in about 15 minutes. If listeners want to ask Derek a couple of questions, feel free to fire away, because we're getting some unsolicited anyway, at 314-880-0808 by texting in. Sorry, Derek, waiting for them to live up to expectations is only a reasonable answer for so long. At some point, you need to make changes. I don't know necessarily what specific changes, because it's a text, so I can't follow.
No, I think that makes a
leak in Wainwright.
Yeah.
What do you do? I mean,
but that's my point, is once you've pot committed,
right,
to use your
thank
phrase,
you, sir,
to pot committed to key players, to core players, you're essentially saying these are the guys that are going to lead us. Now, where they lead us, if they struggle and collapse and lead the team to third place, then that's where it is. And the changes take place after the season. I understand. I agree. I think there should be some impatience. But there's also a reality of you're not going to – who are you going to replace Leak with at this point? You're not. There's not a free agent bazaar going on right now where you can go out and get – oh, you know what? Let's take a mulligan on David Price. Right. Maybe he doesn't like Boston now. Let's go try to redo
that. No, that's clearly not
an option. But you can't do that.
You do have minor league guys.
Who?
You got
who?
Reyes?
Who's better?
How much time's Reyes got before he's
middle
eligible?
Of May, he's eligible.
I don't think if you're going to be a serious contender, even for a wild card spot, that you just let guys have a 6 ERA all season and say, well, we've paid a lot of money, so he's going to keep going
out. In all fairness,
I don't think you can do that.
If I may, what happens, we're talking about the extreme. We're talking about both guys having ERAs.
Yeah,
six.
That's
Let's
right.
say it's the second half. I mean, guys get shut down. They find a reason because, like with a guy like Leake, you have an investment. You don't want him to sour anymore, so you find a reason to give him a little break, right? That's what happens.
I mean, that's what happens. But then he vanishes for a month. But he's still essential to whether you're
at this content. Point in the season. You know, I don't think you're anywhere close to that.
No, there's no thought right now of removing these guys.
I'm saying, Wainwright,
what if we're in the middle of June and the same thing is happening? Well, you just cash it in and say, oh, well, that's who we are. We're going to finish fifth.
To me, you have to look at how each guy is pitching and whether or not there's progress.
It's a tough call. It's a very tough call.
At some point in time, you have to dance with the girl that brung you in this game. You have to turn to and lean on the roster that you built, especially if they're just the teams don't exist anymore and the deals don't exist anymore where you can throw money at things. Every team has a lot of money. You know, the Yankees picking up the spare part from another team in the middle of June or July because they're willing to take on the $12 million contract. Those deals just don't exist anymore. And I understand that's what you're talking about is the teams that would get to a point in June and go, gosh, this guy we really rely on is awful or is struggling. What redundancy can we take on to this roster financially that maybe buys us time? And remember, I mean, it wasn't too long ago, 10 years ago or so, where you saw some of that. You know, Jeff Weaver, could argue, was one of those kind of moves. How often do you see that now in today's game? You just don't. Every team is flush with cash. Very few teams are letting the veterans go. And if they are letting them go, there's a reason why they're gone, because they're not performing either. So what good does that do you? And so it's come to a point in time where at some point you just have to go, this is the roster we have. It's got to fix itself. Or come the end of the season, that's when it gets fixed. And that's when there are repercussions.
Yeah. Understand me. I'm not saying they need to move these guys now. That's the last thing I'm saying. I'm saying at what point, if your guys don't turn it around, do you make a difficult choice and say, well, if we're going to be a serious contender, we're going to have to.
But how can you have a set answer? But you have
there
to
isn't
look,
a set answer. There isn't a set answer.
You have to look at how our guy's doing. Like I said, it's been my experience of a guy who you know is good isn't pitching well and there's no medical reason. They figure out a way to get him a break and hoping getting him away. Suddenly he's got a sore shoulder or something. Buy him some time. Let him clear his head. Come back and try that. But to say, you know, what happens if these guys... But
it's a similar thing to what the Phillies faced when they
signed... It's a different answer for each guy in a different situation.
The Phillies signed Ryan Howard for $1 jillion, and they had Chase Utley, and they both got old, and they both made a ton of money, and they sat there and it tanked the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but
and they're not. They haven't battled out of it yet.
That's my example.
But to say that that's where they are now, I do believe Wainwright is getting closer. I don't know what's going on with Leake. I didn't talk to him after the game last night, but I do believe from what I've seen, he'll find it at some point because he's got a track record. I don't think it's age with Wainwright, certainly not with Leake. So, you know, I don't know why you have to set a date as to why these guys have to get that ERA under four or it's curtains.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's a very difficult call for a manager and a general manager. If you think you have a contender and you've got a couple of players, not specifically Wainwright and Leake, you think you've got a couple of players that were going to perform a whole lot better than they did and they're a problem right now, at what point do you try to do something different? I'm not sure they ever get there. Maybe they don't ever get there.
Or maybe, like I said, they try different things to try to get them back in the groove. But...
Well, that's no doubt that's going
to
happen.
But a lot has to do with, you know, is it the exact same stuff every start? I would say with Wainwright, no. And with Leake, it has been. But I don't know where he goes from here. I don't know what to make of Leake's stuff.
I don't know if it's been the same thing for Leake. I mean, you know, we saw a couple starts where he was shaking Molina off quite a bit. The last two starts, we've seen Eric Fryer start at catcher. Last night, Leake was really good for three innings. I mean, 31 pitches, and then one guy got on base, and it was over. You know, I mean, it was like he couldn't find his rhythm. It was out of the stretch. He had nothing. Everything was straying out of the strike zone. Then he had to throw a strike, and it was a meatball that Howard said, thank you very much, put it in the seats. I mean, you don't see that stark kind of contrast very often in a regular season where a guy goes from the windup and is dominant and then goes to the stretch and can't find it.
Derek, a couple questions from our audience, and I want to make sure we ask them before you head on out. We have Scott Stevens on to talk Blues and Stars. Cubs are a big market team that's opening revenue streams like a big market team. Don't the Cardinals have to start expanding their payroll? It's from the 636.
Yes. And I mean, I think there is an element of a paper tiger with the Cubs. The Cardinals are 2 years cat away from their big money. So 2018 is when it starts, when the billion-dollar broadcast
You're
deal.
You're welcome.
That was nice of you to fork that over. That's out of his slush fund that he's paying for.
That is a nice slush fund.
It was really nice. But the billion-dollar thing, the Cubs don't have that TV deal. So they don't. They haven't had access to it. They got really complicated TV situation there in Chicago. Reinsdorf owns a lot of the TV property there where they would do the broadcast deal. Reinsdorf also owns the White Sox. So he has a vested interest in not necessarily splashing cash on the Cubs. And so some of the Cubs, like the Cubs spending this past year, I know it was huge, but they also saved through the previous 3 years. Look at how small their payroll was. They spent less than their budget so that they could bank the gap, what they weren't spending, and then put it into Lester and Hayward and Zobrist and all this stuff so they could spend now. So they are actually spending now based on past savings, and they're going to get to a point where they spend based on their projections for future earnings. Mm-hmm. And those, as Gordon Whitmire has written many times in the Sun Times, those are less of a given. The Cubs have this big market reputation. Everybody expects the faucets to flow, but it's all based on this notion that they're going to get a TV deal, which they inevitably will. But do they get it before this bubble bursts or before the game changes? As you guys know very well, that the cable situation could change radically. And, you know, a lot of the rights fees right now are based on live TV fees, but also the subscription fees, individual sponsor.
Right, and a lot of people are pulling the cord on that.
That's right.
Derek, we appreciate you stepping by. Good stuff. Enjoyed the discussion. Thank you so
Thanks.
Much for coming down.
Thanks
I know you're heading to the
me.
Ballpark for the Cardinal Day game. Of course, you can hear Derek with Benjamin Hockman and Ben Fredrickson and Chris Gardner on the Writer's Block. That is presented by Bud Select from 12 to 2 here on CBS Sports 105.7 HD2 FM 920 AM and inside STL.com. And the Cardinals are in action during the day. The Blues in action during the evening. Blues and Stars, that is going on tonight. 7 o'clock start, fortunately. And Scott Stevens, the former Blue and current NHL Network analyst, is going to join us for our Bud Select Stanley Cup coverage at 9 o'clock. Send your emails in the morning after at InsideSTL.com. The Plow Penguin is on the read today, the morning after at InsideSTL.com. $20 gift certificate, a Bird Early Cutlery, the prize. We are live on Washington Avenue. It's Rosalita's Cinco de Mayo Street Festival, live mariachi band, face and body painters, entertainment, food, drinks, family fun. Rosalita's.com, 1235 Washington Avenue. Tim McKernan, Jimmy the Cat Hayes, Douglas Sullivan Vaughn with you. It is the Ryan Kelly morning after. CBS Sports, 105.7 HD2 FM, 920 AM, InsideSTL.com, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios, today on the road at Rosalita's on Washington Avenue.